This is Barbara Glickstein, and you're tuned into Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. Today, a colleague, friend, and previous co-host and producer of Snatches here on WBAI joins me as we reconnect and start a conversation that's needed and necessary around women's health, reproductive rights, and the state of affairs in this country and globally today around access to both reproductive health and women's health. Welcome back, Virginia Reith.
Very, very nice to be here. It's been a long time, and you know how I love radio.
I should also mention before we continue speaking that Virginia Reith is an artist and a physician associate in gynecology and women's health who's been in practice for a number of years, leading the way in New York City and New York on many issues that still need to be discussed, if not now more than ever. So Virginia, I know we have, 55 minutes, and I'm gonna let you tell me where we should begin and start it, because the conversation always seems to go where it needs to go. And I know our listeners, if they remember, when you and I get on the air, we could talk for hours. So I know this conversation got kickstarted again because of the release of the film Vessel, that was just at IFC recently, a film that's a critically important film around the issue of global access to women's ability to terminate unwanted pregnancies. But it's really more than just that. And I know we've both screened it, and in the future hope to have the director on who couldn't join us today.
Yeah, I think actually having seen it, obviously in the last couple of days since it opened last week at IFC, I mean, it's many, many points struck me, but one of the things that I found interesting was that it resonated and it made me, it ignited my activism nerve endings. And I think that it struck a chord because of the need globally that Women on Waves and Dr. Gumpert, Rebecca Gumpert, is doing. That I think what happens is that it speaks to women in this country of their ignorance in a lot of ways, or let's say they're taking advantage of the idea that abortion is part of their lives, that it's legal, and especially, and I might be clouded because I'm here in the East and I'm in a big urban city and I'm in New York State, where you get to other parts of the country where there's no access, or even for the medical pill. So it illuminated to me those access issues, not just globally, but it really made me mirror to say, what is actually going on in this country? What are we doing about it? And how do we ignite that activism and the clarity that women have that this is, there was a line that says that it is, that women are the ones to give themselves permission to act. And that's something I think that in this country we need to do and reactivate the idea of women as citizens of the world. We have an ambivalent relationship with the word feminist. I personally don't, but as you well know, it's there, and whether we have to dismantle that piece to be able to get the message through, I'm not sure. But
one of the things that I have heard about the Vessel, and again, it's bigger than, and although a brilliant film and should be seen by everyone, is that although it started in 2000, providing access offshore 12-mile limit in international waters in countries, it started in Ireland and then other countries where abortion is not legal or accessible, that it's now moved to being an online site, right, where, as you mentioned, Virginia, and I'll ask you to clarify it for our listeners, they're helping make medical abortion pills as opposed to surgical or termination using non-medical or non-pills accessible globally with support online. And in fact, because of the restrictions and legislative actions in our own country in the past 12 years, they have had a spike in the number of women from the United States who are now using their services. So your comments about the restrictions across our own country, certainly in states like Louisiana, Alabama, in the South, Texas, Oklahoma, and more. We can go through those states if we want, sadly, that women have, and women have always sought ways of terminating unwanted pregnancies. And so first, if you would describe the difference or describe what a medical abortion is, and then let's talk about historically, both of us having been involved in women's health and activism since the 60s and 70s, prior to Roe v. Wade, which we are going to be honoring the anniversary this week, actually on January 22nd,
yes,
today,
it's coming up.
As we air this program, what that's meant for women and for men and women, not just men. So start with the medical abortion.
You mean the difference?
Yes.
Okay, so what we've known in the past has been the most common, which is what people call surgical, although it's not particularly surgical, but what it is that there is intervention into the uterus by means of a very gentle suction that takes the contents of the uterus out. What's becoming hopefully more popular, most of these are done in clinic settings, hospital settings, but there's also a movement to really increase the availability of what we call early suction abortions done by something called MVA, which is manual vacuum aspiration, which is a very easy procedure for clinicians to learn. And the procedure itself takes about 15 minutes, and there's a very gentle suction involved. So that's gaining, I hope, more popularity. It's less time, it's only about 20 minutes from start to finish, and there's a little less pain involved and discomfort. But that's an access issue, and it's also a training issue. So you also have, where are clinicians being trained for it? Who's being trained in what programs? What kinds of physicians and mid-levels clinicians are able to do this procedure? Medical abortion started off many years ago. It turned out that we recognized that on the package of a common ulcer medication known as misoprostol, or the brand name is Cytotec, it had a warning saying this may act as an abortifacient, meaning this may cause an abortion. So as is illustrated in the film, in South America, this was being used. So women realized, oh, may cause abortion? Good, I'll take it. And so that had been used. But now I'm getting my dates because I've been doing this work for so long. When the actual Mifeprex, which is the activated pill, that's actually known as the abortion pill. That was first created in France, then brought over to this country.
So those are the two pills.
The two pills. The first one, the Mifeprex, ends the pregnancy, okay? And helps detach the pregnancy from the wall. Then you take the misoprostol or Cytotec, and that basically creates the miscarriage of that tissue. And that can be average 4 to 5 hours of some cramping and bleeding, and that's a range that can be anywhere from miserably uncomfortable to, hey, bad cramps, not so bad. But it's certainly, we've seen success. You get 98 to 95 effectiveness on both these procedures. That's substantial. When you can give these pills, and unfortunately we now do the medical abortion, what's under the auspices of, under the guidelines of something called,
it'll come to you. Are these clinical guidelines?
Well, they've been ones, because the pill, the format is, it's kind of crazy, and this is the thing of access, which is the French way, and that it's evidence-based, sorry, that's the term I was looking for, where you have to come to a clinic, you take the pill there. then you have to come back and get the other pill. It's a ridiculous, overly observed, over-managed way to do this. So now, hopefully, we found out that, and the package of pills, they give you three pills.
And what's the third pill?
Because they say, that you need
three of them.
Okay. Now we know that you can use mifepristone as one pill followed by four side effects. And so...
Is that a dosage issue, the way that the pills have been dosed for other purposes?
Yeah, it's dosed. No, it's dosed as the abortifacient.
Okay.
But you don't need all three.
Okay, interesting.
You need only one.
Why do you think that? Why did they do that? What did the
Initially, because that's what the initial protocol was.
I see. So the
Then there were a lot of people who started looking at this and saying, wait a minute, this is too many drugs. We don't actually need this. So that's the way you can actually buy a packet, but you can get three terminations out of that one packet.
I'm reminded that there's been restrictions and continued efforts to restrict the use of medical abortion through telemedicine. In some states where in rural areas and areas where this has been very safely administered via telemedicine, where other kinds of medical care and health care is instituted through. I've learned a lot about rural medicine in the recent past, something I had not looked into, and I've been fascinated by the role of telemedicine in terms of trauma, in terms of psychiatry and psychology, family health, and part of women's health is the use and access of a medical abortion. And because it is still legal in the United States, although with tremendous restrictions now in many states, and this has been targeted. And one of the discussions that I've had previously on Health Styles, I'm Barbara Glickstein, and you're listening to Health Styles. My guest is Virginia Reith, an artist and physician associate in women's health and gynecology, and previously co-host, co-producer with me on Snatches, where telemedicine, if we begin to use and target that health encounter, I would suggest that others too will not be far away. And so communities in rural areas who rely tremendously on all of their healthcare on through telemedicine, I would suggest this is just the beginning of concerns. Of course, you know, women's health and reproductive health are targeted first. So let's talk, before we go about the history of women, my second question, in the film Vessel, the online access to the medical pill, it's not four pills and it's done differently. Do you want to talk about how they do it, or shall we just continue and talk about the history here and how women are still accessing?
You mean that they do it by one pill? Yeah, but they actually still do, I think, that they have to use the Cytotec. Yeah,
okay.
It's two medications.
I see.
But they use it differently. Because you need the Cytotec. You need to have an effective dose, and that's not going to happen in one pill. So that's what you use, four pills at that point.
You know, I think it's worth us also addressing, Virginia, knowing that you do provide women's health services, how the restrictions on access to birth control have also been parallel to the question of accessing termination of unwanted pregnancies. And we recently had a chat about this, including this major push for women to use IUDs that have hormones in them. So, but first let's talk about how the affordable, we were all excited about the Affordable Care Act, access to birth control as being part of preventative care. Then we don't have to go through all of this. Hobby Lobby, which has increased restrictions. But talk about the state of affairs of birth control and where things are, because it's so intimately linked to accessing termination.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think what this, it's incredibly frustrating to talk about the disconnect that myself as an activist but also as a health clinician and taking care of women, when I see the disconnect between people's perception of what health means to people, people as and women included in people, meaning that what it, to me it always comes back to what our attitudes about sex are, and from there we see attitudes about who owns what, because we basically like to pretend that sex doesn't happen, that it's in within the strategy, within the confines of relationships, which are seen controlled still by men, the sexual aspect of it. So,
I would argue not just the sexual aspect.
No,
of it,
I agree too.
You know, I know
but
you
when you think about that, 1.1 abortions are million abortions are done in this country a year, and over 91% of those are by women in their 20s, and those are also under 12 weeks. So what that speaks to is that generation of women who are just starting having sex, right? Where's their access to contraception and to what contraceptives are available to them? So we've seen a huge push in the last, 20 years about the pill. That's always, it's like the pill, the pill, the pill. And we have been able to lower the dosages of the steroid hormones, but we are looking at steroid hormones, for which many women don't do that well on. There's mood swings, there's weight gain, there's problems with clots, and this has been exposed in a couple of the media in the last couple of years, looking at some of the impact of these medications that are so pushed. In the last, IUDs have had an interesting history, and we've talked about it before on Snatches, we did. But in the last several years, there's a newer IUD that was designed to have a synthetic progesterone embedded in the IUD. Now, it has certain purposes where for women who have very heavy bleeding, it can really make an impact on those women. So it has a place, and we are seeing huge changes in the acceptability of IUDs. You and I came out of the 70s when, after that whole blow up of IUDs kind of blowing up in women.
Dalkin Shield.
Dalkin Shield and the Lippi's Loop and issues of with infertility as a consequence. And for years, up until very recently, IUDs were not encouraged to be put in women until you actually had one child, if not two. So clinicians of a certain age were very reticent to even use IUDs. But they slowly have been gaining more and more acceptance. And they are, with the pill, the two primary forms of contraceptive. Because what's interesting, and I told you this the other day, if you can believe this, diaphragms are no longer made in this country. So those women in their 20s, okay, who don't want the IUD, who don't want the pill, who want a non-chemical and non-interventive contraceptives are left with nothing.
What about the cervical cap? First of all, I have to pause because I cannot believe the diaphragm. Yeah. And I've heard this before and you've shared it recently. It was my birth control of choice for many years. I say that comfortably.
It was my contraceptive for the majority of my reproductive life.
Mine too. And never felt like it interfered, didn't reduce my interest in sex, didn't get in the way. And I always felt that it was the one that when other women would ask me that I would suggest they try it at least. And so what about the cervical cap?
The cervical cap had been stopped being made in this country, a good 10 years maybe at this point, 8 years for sure. We just didn't get the acceptance because you had to fit it, and clinicians weren't interested in it, and it wasn't taken seriously as a contraceptive.
And you don't have to.
And the same with the female
condom. Well, at least the IUD is very expensive. It's let's talk about cost.
IUD is expensive. The immediate cost. Is high, but if you think about it, it's way cheaper than the pill.
Yeah.
the outrage to me, and talk about access and even the Affordable Care Act and how it influences this. Pills, I remember this from the 80s, the production and manufacturing of birth control pills would range from anywhere from $5 to $10 a pack to make. The average cost of a pack of pills is $50.
Incredible markup.
Incredible markup. And you're seeing women paying, still having to pay substantial co-pays.
Yeah.
For contraceptive.
If they're fortunate to have insurance.
Yes, if they're fortunate to have insurance. So you have, yes, do we have more generics available? Yes. Are there some still concerns about the efficacy of those generics? Yes. But the problem is that that's a lot of money. And you're talking about the majority of terminations done in this country, so the majority need for contraception is women in their 20s and younger. Where are those women who are not working? And even if they are, they're getting a crap minimum wage, and they're not working full time, a lot of them. How are these women affording this? So they go on it for a couple of months because they can get it from maybe a clinic, and then they stop being on it. Or they borrow it from their friends. I mean, that's, you know, you see this kind of wild exchange of contraception, and you know, it's not, doesn't work. So when it doesn't work, there you are pregnant. And depending, as you said earlier, where are you in this country? And what's your accessibility to being able to have even options counseling, let alone actually real access to being able to end a pregnancy that you don't want in your early 20s.
So you started explaining to the listeners that this hormone type IUD has its clinical benefits for women, particularly those women who have severe bleeding and difficult menstrual cycles, monthly menstrual cycles. Well, what about women? What are some of the side effects women are having with this IUD who don't need that input of hormone? And what concerns should they be thinking about in their early 20s having an IUD inserted and maybe leaving it in for how long? How long can you leave this IUD in?
The most common IUD that's known and produced and distributed in this country is something called the Paragard, which what we used to know as the copper T. That's still probably the most widely used. The Mirena, which is the one...
What a name. Yeah. Sounds like a dance.
The Mirena.
The Mirena.
The Mirena has this the progesterone IUD in it. I have concerns because I think it's being used in a lot of women that don't need that extra progesterone. And synthetic progesterones, known as a progestin, not a true progesterone, very different from natural progesterone, has a lot of impact. I mean, there's a lot of known side effects there. And you can have depression, weight gain. There's been some evidence that it may be a causal agent in some possible cancerous effects or causal agent. So I think that it's not indicated for a lot of younger women, and yet I see it being put in a lot of younger women. That is good for 5 years. The Paragard is good for 10. So when you think about that, what's interesting about that is a contraceptive, and it's funny, women's resistance to it. And that's really gets down to the core issue is how, because it's about choosing. You take the IUD out, meaning that you are choosing to become pregnant. Now, that whole idea of choosing to become pregnant creates a very different dynamic for the American woman, because we don't have a good sense of what this choice is all about. What I find interesting is women sometimes will take it out and still need contraception. They're not wanting to get pregnant, but they're ambivalent about choices. which I find it fascinating, that we have not empowered ourselves to truly understand the responsibility of choice, that we almost want to be backed up into it.
Well, wouldn't you suggest that a culturally or environmentally caused reason is fear of not being supported through that pregnancy, as similarly to not being supported during that termination? The economic situation many women find themselves in, not to excuse each person of feeling and owning that power, but the messages that are given constantly to women, young girls growing up, which is changing and has been changing, has influenced that sense of, do I really have a choice? And I think, again, you know, we're here in the Northeast and living in New York City, I'm always very reminded that, and this is a nationally heard radio program, that it's not always reflective of what's going on in other parts of New York State, let alone other parts of this country and the world.
I think that's true. I do think that there is an interesting part, attitude that is changing, and I certainly hear it here in New York, so this may be more prevalent here. Excuse me. But there's some fear that I find is incredibly disempowering, which is, it's the fear of not getting pregnant that seems to have taken over a younger generation of women, and they are no longer thinking of that, have to control their fertility, that now the anxiety is whether they're going to get pregnant. And we've targeted those women who have had abortions. So somehow the right to life and the anti-choice movement has been somewhat successful in convincing women in a sort of subterranean message that these events in a woman's life may indeed have an impact on your fertility. And so there has been something that's shifted in the confidence that women have about over their reproductive systems. That this is a system, for whatever reason you can ask, but it is a biologic system that does, that has the ability to reproduce. So there's some kind of lack of embodiment around that, and I think that had a lot to do over the last 40, 50 years of that sex is separate from reproduction. And somehow we are not seen as active participants in that, which again goes back to my issue, which is still, we ourselves don't embody the idea that we are citizens of the world and demand and are, that we have the right to expect respect, freedom of choice around our own bodies. That we haven't embodied this, that we don't stand, that we're not clear. We don't have that
core strength.
We don't have that core strength nor belief. And I think that's the thing that prevents this, our own activism, that is in outrage by some of these new restrictions and legislation. One thing, I just want to say this one thing, is that in the film, there's the most violent aggression they had against them was in Poland. And what was fascinating about the film throughout, the majority of the demonstrations against the vessel and what they were doing is all men.
It was all men.
So I think we have to look at that seriously. These men, this kind of legislation that's happening and restrictions are in fact done by men, and we have to look at what is our response to that as women and as women with sisters all over this country.
My guest is Virginia Reith. You're listening to Health Styles. This is Barbara Glickstein. Health Styles is produced by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. Virginia Reith is an artist and physician associate. Previously, we co-hosted and co-produced Snatches. We're going to take a brief break, and when we return, pick up on this conversation. Stay tuned.